This is a horror actual play. Viewer discretion is advised. Content warnings for this episode include alcohol abuse, harm to children, and vomiting. A single drop of sweat prickles at the napes of necks. The distance wavers in sight from boiling heat cloistering stagnant. There is silence in a desert where nothing moves and nothing goes. The vast basin isn't known for its tourism. A single tumbleweed rolls past, breaking the silence. Along with it, a draft of wind, hotter than the sitting air. Far up in the blue, blue sky, a single bird of prey circling, its only purpose to circle forever. The sky is green, though, really. But it's blue, bright, cloudless, no reprieve from the sun that burns red in the afternoon. The light is odd and skewed, everything tinted the wrong color. A single tumbleweed rolls past. 20 feet from the road that isn't a road, stumbling through errant rocks, past a cactus long past its prime, withered to a petrified gray. A drop of sweat along a hairline. The only water to be had lapped up by the dust as it drops, the sound an explosion in the silence. A single tumbleweed rolls past. But the silence was already broken. The bird flew off to circle somewhere else, and the sweat is ever pervasive on skin. Dust billows on the path that's not a path, gritted into the ground by the desperate, because only the desperate would dare travel the vast lands of the basin. The wheels of a cart turn slowly. The horses, slow and slick from the heat, flies buzzing against their coats. Eyes red and rolling in their head, or not quite. At least not now. Two people walk this lonely road, crunching footsteps mixing with the rhythm of the wheels turning and the clomp of hooves.
Beatrice is about 5'3" tall, but is in a very long kind of classic Western outfit. So the skirt kind of covers these boots with a slight heel to give her a few more inches. It has these dark brown eyes that will kind of offer a soft sparkle of amber when in the right ray of sunlight. And her eyes are slightly obscured by these gold glasses with these kind of small circular frames. And under her left eye, there's a small beauty mark. It has very, very fair skin with some kind of reddish undertones, slightly burnt from the heat of the traveling. Her hands are slightly blistered because they have not had time to develop calluses. From previously not working a day in its life and now walking along this very long, seemingly endless path. She has these dark brown curls that fall all the way down her back and a light purple bandana tied over it. And the only notable piece of jewelry is a small braided leather bracelet around its wrist.
Travis takes up a lot more space, a portly man of 5'10". Manages to be quite a striking figure, albeit one that isn't too intimidating thanks to the eyes that are dark and full of charisma whenever he's getting about and talking to a crowd. While the sun has lined in some spots and wrinkles into his face, a beard does a little bit of work to help cover him up, as well as a lovely signature black hat, as is his namesake. He dresses properly for the era. A little coat, little vest, a nice presentable shirt, white and clean underneath, that he uses to make himself look presentable, with some brown trousers. Nice, well-polished boots. Anything to keep up appearances, to be more than he really is. Bits and bobs are not only a part of the cart, but a part of his appearance. Maybe a watch here, or a handkerchief there. Little bits and pieces to make him seem like an everyman. Well, we seem to find ourselves in yet another fine and opportune place. Dead as it may be. What say you, my fair friend, turning to the young companion?
I mean, I suppose it's as empty as any other place. I don't know. It's kind of all blending together.
Well, we'll blend this town from a place of blend together with everything else to a blend together of our successes as we peddle all this fine just water we have to everybody in town. Anyone we can find, I suppose.
Yeah, it feels like we're getting closer to something, and yet I haven't seen all that many people.
Just the way of the land. It could be worse. We could be heading the other direction again.
I suppose. So, I suppose we're just continuing on then? And we'll find some people.
Oh, absolutely. Opportunity awaits. As long as it's not the way we came from.
As long as it's not the way we came from.
Travis Black is a traveling man, as it were. But recently, since bringing B under his wing, he's been on more of a specific path, or they have, seeking out someone, following a path, because B is persistent in this, and being turned down once has not allayed her. B, the man that you are following doesn't leave a clear trail. You believe that it is because of what he does, but there are signs, only if you know what you're looking for. You hear a squeak.
He kind of turns, but if there's nothing, I think, abundantly clear about it, then it'll probably just continue on and not think much of it.
The only thing that comes into your mind was it wasn't a squeak of an animal, but something metal. But maybe it was just the wheel turning.
Did you hear that?
Hear what now?
Oh, it sounded like metal.
Oh, well, there's a lot of it in the cart. I wouldn't be surprised if something got jostled around on this poor road.
I suppose. How much longer do you think until we make it more into the heart of the town?
Oh, I don't know. Let me consult with my pocket watch. See if I can't calculate with how long we've been on the road. Maybe an hour or two, who knows? Maybe more, depends on how nice the cart is.
All right then. I suppose we'll just keep at it.
That's all we ever do. But you seem to think this squeak might have been a little something more. Unless you're just hoping.
I don't know, I feel like I'm just hoping about everything these days, but...
That's nothing wrong with that. That's what we sell. Or I suppose I sell, since you don't need to tarnish your good reputation with my reputable actions of just being a salesman who's very convincing. But hope is a commodity that's not easy to come by, so keep holding on to that.
I will admit it's getting harder by the day.
We'll find him, kid.
I guess I'm less so worried about finding him and more so about what happens next.
Well, we got a road to think about it on. Might as well take the time we have.
Yeah, you're right.
Another metallic squeal, screech, twisting of rusted metal. And almost as if a sort of fog, way off still in the distance, cleared. You see a hazy, blurred from how the heat stays in the air. Town?
Oh, there's your answer.
Well, I suppose I wasn't expecting it to happen so quickly, but maybe there is still room for hope.
Who or what was the last body you left? And what message did you leave for him to find in the mess of it?
The last body left at this point is the body of a young buck getting a little big for his britches, making a mistake of recognizing someone he shouldn't, in a place where, you know, a man just wants to be able to have a drink without too much trouble. And he allowed the young man to give his spiel at the bar, make his threats, make his challenge, and then they were set to meet, you know, high noon for an old-fashioned duel. And about an hour after that young man left, Abe found out where he lived, strangled him in his home, and left him there with the message. Let's see. Left him with the message. Time's running out, old friend. Best be getting the move on.
You pick up your foot to set it down again, like you've done for decades, and a lone tumbleweed blows across your path. Out of nowhere, sudden, unexpected. You almost step on it, but it passes like all of them do.
Abner Slade is an old black man with sun-beaten skin, a thick black beard, and steely gray eyes. While age and hard living has thinned him, he carries himself like a man who is used to being the biggest person in any room he's ever disturbed the peace of. He wears a fine silver-threaded black vest over a well-pressed burgundy button-up. Well-worn pants cover his bony legs and flow into chunky black boots. He is bald under a cowboy hat and wears a blue bolo tie under the black bandana around his neck. His hands are thick and calloused, and his fingernails have been bitten down to the quick. On his right pinky finger is a small ring adorned by a gold tooth, and a sapphire in his left ear globe glints in the light.
You can feel your shirt sticking to your back as your eyes take in the red-tinted horizon. By the color and the angle and the heat, you can tell it's mid-afternoon. Later than it should be, but you move slowly these days. Time does not matter out here much. It goes whether you like it to or not. It has been that way your whole life. A little boy, a man before he was meant to be or ready to be. Either one fits. Both. The stages of your life overtaking you before you could figure out what the last one had been. And now you're here, in the present, sweating under the red of the sun, and leaving messages in blood and bone. You hear footsteps. Almost as slow as yours, meandering.
I'm gonna make scarce while trying to see who's coming.
There's not many places to hide out here. It's fairly barren. In the basin, the mountains tower and cause shadows, but you're far enough from them now that you don't have that advantage. But as you look around in the middle of the desert, you're alone.
I'm but I still hear footsteps.
You did. No longer.
Think the heat's getting to me. You know, adjust the hat to try to better block out the fading sun. And just collect himself.
You can see a reprieve. Maybe a few more miles away. A small town. Looks like any small town. But you know it. Another metallic squeak of a rusted weather vane blows on the wind. Distant. Near. Far. Close. For the last hour, you've struggled with that. Your vision unreliable. The road stretching out, never ending. The distance still the distance it had been. You feel your exhaustion more heavily now. Hours of walking, miles down, and nothing traveled. You see the town. You've seen the town, not only earlier in the day, but earlier in your life. It was always on the horizon as if waiting. Unassuming, calm, nothing special. Nothing you needed to search out except for a dream. A dream and a message left. And that prickling you get at the nape of your neck when the basin calls. One tumbleweed rolls on your right, slow, meandering. Couldn't be following you. And it's not, because it rolls past, caught up in a hot breeze.
I think Jeb's gonna say, you know, feel like I should import some grease along with the water. So that's been creaking. Jeb is a tall man in his 60s, gone fully silver gray, with a black hat that sort of intimates it being a cowboy hat, but with a wide brim. He has a long black duster, goes almost to his ankles, and he's wearing a respectable overcoat, or respectable shirt and waistcoat. His belt buckle, if one were looking closely, instead of being more ostentatious, a styling choice, is a simple but perfect metal circle. At his belt is a small lantern that, even in the hot light of the sun, seems to glint with an otherworldly glow. And in contrast to sort of the simplistic nature of his garb, he's kind of covered in charms from various places. Around his neck jingle all manner of amulets, and his pockets bulge as if they are filled with all manner of herbs and spices and magical devices.
The same tumbleweed circling you, caught up in some odd phenomena of the wind? The afternoon basin sun does tend to confuse with the heat. Besides, you can't trust your eyes today. Temple, that's it. Temple is there. It has been there. You've seen it for hours. And it's still there, still on the horizon where it has been.
I think Jeb is gonna reach into his pocket and pull out some very small spectacles and sort of look at Temple and then take them out and polish them very furiously and put them back on, as if looking for something to augment his vision.
With your glasses on, one more step. And you're falling through a broken wooden fence. No, a gate. Well, no need for a gate here. The squeaking settles down as the wind dies. Before you, silence. A caw from high above, a bird lone, circling. Behind you, that darn tumbler. But it goes off, past the fence, doesn't enter with you.
I think Jeb's gonna look around and see this fence. Is there anything else that he can see? Is it just a fence, or is there any outbuildings associated?
What was far, now immediate. Dust blows along an empty street, lined with buildings that can barely stand under the pressure of settling. And you're in Temple.
Dust off my hat. That's not the strangest entrance I've ever had, but I'm sure it's fine. And then I think Jeb's gonna walk over to the nearest sheriff's office or saloon, whatever's closest.
You hear footsteps again. In front of you, walking away. All of a sudden, walking toward. A broken wooden sign hanging from the arch of a broken down gate, and a man with a familiar back, because he's always walking away from you.
I think Avra's just gonna match Jeb's steps, just kind of like step when he steps, so that he again doesn't detect any kind of, you know, someone walking behind you. Just perfectly match his steps and just follow after him. See where he's going to. Not gonna engage just yet.
I think that might be one of our first roles. I don't know if it's gonna be physical or social, just because I think the action of like continue to sneak behind someone, I really like the idea. Yeah, deliberately. So I'm gonna call that physical, like, because you're physically sneaking and trying to time your steps with Jeb's.
What's the challenge tier for this role?
I would say this is probably a tier one. I think, especially because you know Jeb so well at this point, it's not going to be too hard to accomplish.
Oh, wow. That's 16.
You are a ghost. Like, and Jeb knows ghosts, but so maybe that's why you're like, if I just get in line right here. I will say that your presence will be known once you wish it to be, unless if Jeb turns around at some point.
I'm gonna wait for the perfect moment to make my presence known.
It must be the horses. They're faster, even in this heat, even with their exhaustion, they're faster than you imagined they were, because Temple is so close now. It's right there, right in front of you. You see the back of a building that looks like it maybe at one point it had been a chapel of some sort. You see a fence ringing around this town. Travis, you realize that you're coming in towards the back of it. And if you skirt around, you can find the entrance that you can lead your horses and your carriage through.
Well, I suppose that day's journey actually wasn't all that bad.
Horses must have really wanted to be done walking. Good for us. And guess we'll have to treat them right, make sure they get nice and rested and fed and watered and whatnot. Hopefully they got good shade for them.
Yeah. The sun seems hotter out here, almost, which doesn't make much sense because it's all the same sun, but I swear it's not.
That's just the heat getting to you after being out in it for so long. We could use a cover on this cart that's a bit more covering.
Well, I mean, we've made it to some sort of civilization. We could poke around.
I'll take a look in the general store once we get ourselves situated.
As you lead the horse and carriage and cart around the side... God, this town must be smaller than it looks, because you're through the front gate. You could have sworn you hadn't made it all the way around there yet.
Kid, am I seeing things?
I'm not sure, are you?
That's a great question.
I'm gonna have Travis, I know you're not super skilled in this, but roll a supernatural.
Absolutely. Roll. I wrote all of my supernatural skills with a question mark. It's like magic, ghost, supernatural. There's a six.
All you know is that that gate couldn't have moved. There's no way that gate could have moved. There must have been a second gate. You just missed it, and the horses found their way.
Heat must be getting to me. At least the horses can walk through gates the right way.
They're smarter creatures than one might think.
Oh, God, they are. Maybe you should drive if I'm out here shooting through gates like it's nothing else. I mean, we got two horses powering the cart. Who knows how fast we're going.
I could certainly try.
You never driven the cart? You never driven a cart, excuse me?
I can't say that I have.
Well, no better time than when we have no idea where we are and we don't know what's going on with these gates. Here, take the helm here.
I'd imagine there are many better times.
Oh, absolutely not. Opportunity, dear B, opportunity. And this is yours, to not crash us into the gates that are not moving at all.
All right. Can't be that hard.
Just hold on.
Horses are smart creatures.
Just guide them. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, and be kind of like, it tries to like almost match how like Travis sits when driving and like kind of find that same position.
You're a couple heads shorter than me, so maybe get yourself comfortable.
Would this be technology?
Yes. All right. Ooh, that's my worst stat.
Makes sense. On brand.
It's a seven.
I'm teaching here. Tech is my best stat. Why don't I boost on here?
That's an 11.
I think you almost like lead the horses into like the wall of the nearest building, and then Travis just like very like not so subtly is like, okay, we're just gonna steer a little bit this way. You're good.
All right, you're gonna have to raise your left hand to signal. I mean, granted, there's no one here, so I guess you don't really have to.
Okay. I think I'm getting it.
Baby steps. First time, not bad.
It certainly could have been worse.
All right, how many gates did you take us through?
A bird overhead wonders not at the origin of the town below it. It doesn't matter from whence the town came, but it does matter that there is a roost in the eaves of a building. A building that at street view resembles a saloon, a store across the street, an unused chapel down the road, a sheriff's office, only able to be picked out by the word sheriff, the lasting remnants of a time when people walked the streets, or street, as there seems to be but one. Before the land spreads out between the small, rickety houses, farms or ranches, lean-tos for mining folk, maybe a couple small homes in the upper floors of the town buildings, but always small, always hidden away, mostly forgotten by everything except for time. And right in the gates, in a wide dirt place before the town buildings start is this cart, two horses, and two people and you see the only other two people so far walking one after the other a little bit farther down this main path of the town of Temple.
Yeah, B kind of gives like a little like a head nod, like a kind of like, you know, like points with your head, you know, towards them and goes, potential customers, perhaps.
Better than nothing. Oh, I don't know why one of them's walking so weird. Hey, yeah, we could definitely sell something to him.
Yeah, and then B kind of tries to, like, just continue on, like, I guess kind of mostly straight, so it should be, yeah.
Just keep her straight. Just keep her straight. There's no more turns.
The saloon doesn't have a name, doesn't have the word saloon on it, but it's easily acknowledged by the two rather short swinging doors.
I think Jeb enters, he's going to reach one long hand up and feel along the top of the door frame. And I think he's feeling for certain sigils and protective things, long since worn away. Just rubs his finger and says, And as he enters, what does he see as he enters the saloon?
I will say you do feel something carved above the doorframe. At first pass, though, you can't tell if it's an intentional mark, because if it's a religious one, it's not one you're intimately familiar with. But there is something up there. As you enter this saloon, the air is just as thick and heavy and dusty as it is outside, but it does afford you the shade of a roof, so there's a welcome reprieve there. Your eyes slightly adjust to the shaded darkness. As you look about, you see there's the bar, and then a man with a bald head and like a scraggly beard behind it. At first glance, you see there's a couple patrons at a booth in the back, maybe having dinner or drinks, and then there's one person sitting at the bar on this stool, sort of hunched over their own drink, and no one seems to be paying much attention to the newcomer.
I think Jeb's gonna amble slowly, walk up to the bar, and ask the bartender, is there any chance that I could grab water? Don't suppose you got much news of the family out here. The family, of course, being sort of the catch-all name for, like, sort of his flock or congregation of the Temple of All, which he is a, you know, a wandering minister, shall we say.
The bartender turns around and at first you have to sort of like keep your reaction to him in check, because the skin on his head looks a lot like cracked salt flats almost. And he has this like faded look in his eye as he turns to you, and he just repeats, "Water."
Yes. Water.
And he grabs a glass from behind the bar. It's dusty as everything else in here, and he goes to turn on like a tap sort of thing, and the first thing that comes out of it is like a thick, like, looks like something was lodged in there, like dust or dirt, and it plops into the glass at first, and then the rest of it starts to fill up with this grayish water? And then he sets that in front of you, and then just continues to sort of like stare past you, through you. It's unsure.
I think Jeb's gonna grab the glass and sort of hold it up so he can keep the bartender in eye as he's also looking at the glass. I think, does he, I think, honestly, Jeb sets it down and pulls out a couple of, like, small amulets and sort of, like, does a test on the water quality, but, like, a supernatural one.
The test comes back bad.
I think while Jeb has this interaction with the bartender, Abner is going to come in, stopping at the doorway under those symbols. Just feels like a shiver go down his spine. Then keep it moving, get past that weird bit of energy, and go up to the bar behind Jeb as he's having this conversation, and come up behind him, put one hand on Jeb's shoulder and the other on the bar, putting down a couple of, you know, a couple bits of currency, and just say to the bartender, two sarsaparillas, if you will.
I think Jeb throws a glass of water in his face.
The wad of substance that was in this water had started to slowly, almost vein through the grayish muck. And as you toss it, you watch as it sticks to Abe's forehead and slowly melts down, staining the skin even darker.
Well, that kills you. It'll be exactly what you deserve.
Nice to see you too. He's gonna take a hand and just wipe the gross dough to the ground. Say, I'm just gonna buy you a drink.
You can keep your money. I don't need whatever blood you got on your hands marking my path.
One thing I got on my hands now is that shit you tossed on me.
I was gonna give you a warning, but think I might just leave you here and let this town continue to happen to you. Cause I can't rightly speak to what exactly is going on, but I think this town is a bit more evil than whatever poor young man you murdered. I do a lot when it comes to laying ghosts to rest, and a lot of the time, you know, with your ghosts, the question that keeps coming up is not you know, what comes next or what evil they done in life, because most of the time, it's not been much. They know where they're going. They just want to know why. Just, I can't answer them.
You guys are going to get a plot point.
And I think Jeb sort of slides off the stool and goes to, as if he's going to explore the rest of the town. Sort of not like shoulder checking Abner, but like coming very close. Flashback to a much, much younger Jeb, maybe, early 30s, long enough that he's become confident in sort of venturing out into the Great Basin to attend to some of the more unquiet dead, lending the aid of the Temple for All, also in a ministry attempt to spread some of the family. And I think this is a particularly thorny case. Multiple people have died, and it seems like there's not just dead that are unquiet because this is an unquiet land, but someone who has been deeply wronged, and so Jeb has sort of been on this detective hunt, trying to figure out what wrong has been done, and then who has done it, trying to lay the town to rest, and I think he sees a young man, kind of his age, who's a newcomer, as he sits down on the fence next to him.
I think at the point where Jeb meets Abe, it's shortly after one of several, over the course of his lifetime, moments of remorse, where he kind of has... These moments come and go, of being able to acknowledge that the violence he commits is bad. At least until he can find someone who shows him, well, maybe it's not that bad. by doing violence unto them. But Jeb gets him at a good time, gets him fresh right at the start of a bit of a remorse kick. He's trying to think of, like, you know, he's done a few people wrong recently, and he wants to do better. And here comes this handsome young guy, sits down next to him. It looks like he's got something on his mind. Looks like someone who could use some help. And, you know, that's what good people do, right? They help people. So Abe, you know, goes out on a limb and says, "My art department, you look like you got, you know, you look a little lost in thought. Nice to meet you. My name's Abner. I'm feeling magnanimous lately. Anything I can do to help you out? You look like you're in some trouble."
Jeb kind of has his head in his hands at this point, sort of lifts his head up, holds out his hand, says, Jebediah Monroe, but my friends call me Jeb. I don't know how you can tell, but I could use some help. I don't know if you're too familiar with parts around here, but got a whole community looking to me, and I wouldn't just ever say this to any of them, but I'm not sure I'm able to figure out exactly what's going on here. It seems they've got themselves fully twisted up here.
All right, well, you might not know this about me, but I'm real good at solving problems. So if you got a problem that needs getting solved, I can help. So you tell me, I mean, I don't know, big community, a bunch of people. I mean, out of the goodness of my heart, I couldn't just let that pass me by. So you just tell me what's going on, and I'll do my best to set it right.
Jeb stands up, walks over to Abner, and holds out his hand as if to pull him up, and says, All right, let me tell you all about it."
And Abner will take his hand and say, "Don't mean to be presumptuous, but I think this is going to go great, Jeb."
The mists roll across the valley over the bodies of hundreds of dead as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal. Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so, so, so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder, a podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at DiceExploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pardon the interruption, but here's another show we'd think you'd like. It hunted. Suspense and all.
Say that one more time.
Suspense and all?
Right.
We all have to haunt something, I guess.
You're like the spooky candela person. You're meant to know how to make this stop.
It was hunting.
Yes, of course I'm all right. I'm always all right.
Well, don't make promises you can't keep, love.
I can't keep a single promise I make.
Well, because it's coming for you.
It had been hunting for a long time.
In all this darkness, all this bleed, it's all about who you find. Or who finds you.
Check out Queer PG's 3-episode Candela Obscura series on YouTube or anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you want to support the podcast, you can head over to our Patreon, or if you're not into monthly subscriptions, but you're liking the episodes, you can go over to our Ko-fi and leave us a tip. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Travis, what is the process of coming into a new town and setting up shop?
Evaluation is the first step we always take. And this is a live monologue to be as he's educating on running the shop. We have to look and see what's available. And as you can see, no one's available. I don't like the look of the person who stroked the top of the door frame when they walked into the saloon. And I don't like the look of the guy who shivered as he walked into the door frame. So I don't trust the look of most folk. I think what we do is we get settled. We hit the general store, maybe get some supplies for anything I might tinker with or build for them, make sure we're fed, we're comfortable, maybe talk with some townspeople that we do run into. The shop owners usually know most folks, so we can get a lay of the land and see if it's worth taking our time to saddle up here and sell to folk, or if we just keep on moving along. It's nice to rest, though. We'll definitely take a day to recuperate, let the horses rest. But as far as I've seen, I don't like anyone to sell to here. But, you know, I imagine the bartender will be really friendly and they'll have a nice establishment with clean drinks and a fun atmosphere.
All right. That sounds like a plan.
Did you comprehend all that?
I think I got most of it.
Perfect.
So then we're off to find people who you like more than the two people who were weird about walking in the door.
I just think they don't look like people we should interact with off first impressions. While first impressions are important, it's not really right considering they weren't interacting with us, but that person was rubbing the door frame for like 4 seconds. It was extended. I don't know if they're like a, you know, they're a foreman and they're checking for, you know, weak parts of the wood, and then that one guy was just and then kept walking. Like, the door hit him. The door hit his chest because he stood there and let the swinging door swing back into him. But we talk to people. We get information. If understand our environment and make sure it's a good place for us to be and a place where we can sell and effectively get out from if people don't like what we sell.
I suppose being able to have an exit is just as important as being able to have an entrance.
That is correct. And with all the gates in this town, I don't know if we get lost on the way out or not, so maybe we just let the horses take us on that one. And as long as we keep east, we'll be all right if we need to get out. But you had your own shiver in response to whatever that noise was back on the cart. You think there's something here for you?
I mean, I don't know. I've kind of given up on trusting my gut, but this feels different.
Well, we'll be sure to take a look around then. How about you pick then? Where do you think we should head to first? You think we should grab a drink? You think we should, you know, the horses are all good now, so we can do whatever we think is best.
You said that the bartender is probably gonna be friendly and know people. I mean, it's kind of like where everyone hangs out. You get to know people. So perhaps we should go check that out, and we can just steer clear of the people who were weird about the door.
Sounds good to me. And we can, because we're not setting up shop, we can just leave the cart as it is. No need to put up the one sign that is setting up shop and calling that. We can just head on into the saloon and leave the sign in the back of the cart.
Nice and easy.
Very simple.
Despite wanting to steer clear, as you walk towards the entrance of the saloon, the doors swing open, and Jeb walks out. B, you see the person you've been trying to find, the person who at first dismissed you, and you found him again.
I think there's almost like a slow motion, like as they kind of pass each other. And it takes B a second to like kind of process, because was fully not quite there. And then kind of blinks a few times, stumbles back a little bit, and then turns, excuse me.
Yes. Yes.
B, I don't know. They stroked the door, and now they just grunted like four times before they responded to you, kid. Pick your battles, kid, please.
I think Jeb, hearing this, squints like brightly against the sun, just goes, "Mr. Black, now I'm not saying I am a particularly welcoming character, but I'd appreciate if you'd not cast aspersions upon my reputation. Maybe look to your own. It's all I'm saying. Just friendly advice."
Friendly advice? Don't stroke a doorframe for 5 seconds when you walk into the bar.
I think at that point, Abner also exits the bar. Doors swing.
Yeah, Abner, when you push to open the door and walk out, you put your hand on it, and it's not flat. And when you pull away, you notice that you've put your hand on a bit of the wood that almost looks like a hand was carved into that exact spot. Wrinkles, nails, very, very well done.
Does this look like my hand or some kind of weird situation?
No, it doesn't look like yours. It's just odd that a hand was carved in out of the back of a door.
Yeah, that is odd.
Yeah, I'm going to give you guys another plot point.
Abe will clock that, keep walking. And then mid this interaction, just say, Jebediah.
Jebediah's going to whirl on him and say, "What?"
It's just, we were in the middle of a conversation, you walked away. That's rude. You should apologize.
No.
as they talk, I shuffle B a little bit to the side to not be in line with, just to be safe, just to.
Really kind of back at like a spectating distance.
What do you mean, no?
You apologize when you got something that you're sorry for. I'm not sorry. I don't know how I could be more clear. Abner, I wish you were dead, and I'm just sad that I can't do it myself.
You and hell knows how many other people.
Well, hold on. As B here did seem to want to speak with you, don't, as you say, to not cast aspersions, don't let the person who they happen to end up have been traveling with cast aspersions on their reputation. B's a fine young person. They're a great young, bright mind, and they're not me. At least give them their first chance.
Second chance.
Second chance. It's a first.
I suggest you should have heeded my earlier advice when we first did encounter each other, which was to head east and not let the dust hit you on the way out. I sense you're a gentle soul, and I don't want to see you dead, but I fear that is the most likely outcome of your current journey.
I can't go out east. I won't go there without answers. I've come all this way, and if I die, then maybe that's just how it is, but I can't and I won't leave until you give me something, anything.
Well, that would sure be a way to get those answers. But what you got questions for? People die, and then they rise up, and then you gotta put them back down, and it's just sort of an endless cycle out here. Dust to dust to dust to dust.
Ashes to ashes.
Verily.
Nonetheless, I tried to leave things behind when I came out here, and it seems to be following me, and I can't see it, but I can feel it behind me with every step that I take, and it's like a tension, and it's pulling, and I need it to stop.
You hear rushing water.
Bielik takes a deep, breath. Like, when you, kind of feel a panic catch up and you try to, shove it back down.
A couple seconds only before it dissipates.
I can't live like this, because then I might as well be dead.
Alright. No need to get dramatic about it. Would... No, I'm sorry. That was unkind. I mean, maybe deserved, but unkind.
Jeb, for God's sake.
People call me all kinds of names, but you're acting real rude today. Look at that. Look at that poor little... Look at that one. Look at it. Can't believe you being, casting dispersions.
Hey, my friend. It's good to see you, by the way. Hello. didn't realize it was you.
Aren't you shot my guns?
Huh?
Ain't you shot my guns once? Or twice?
Fixed. Not shine, but I had a nice polish service, which I still have. Anyway, previous customer relations aside, how about instead of sitting out in a hot, dusty road where there's dust and dust and dust to dust and verily ashes and whatever the fuck else y'all are saying, why don't we take it inside, sit down for a meal? I'll happily purchase your time for a meal and let B talk to you. I'll keep my mouth shut.
Upon seeing that you're friends with Abner, I think Jeb's gonna do some calculation and say, I don't think there's gonna be anything fit for human consumption inside that salon there. But Mixby, why don't you come with me? You wanna meet a ghost?
Not particularly. I'm kind of trying to get away from them.
Well, then why are you out here, then? This is...
because you're the person who knows things about ghosts.
Yeah, because I'm
You're really the only lead I had. Have, I guess.
Alright. What do you want to know? Well, maybe we should just settle this right here.
I want to know how to make it all stop.
I think, Jeb takes a moment, to really look at B and says, let me guess, had an imaginary friend growing up, but past the age, kids usually forget about their friends. You had yours, even though the grown-ups told you to stop. You kept, and you had more, and then, wasn't so fun to have imaginary friends when it's a crowd shouting at you the whole time, and you just wanna just do anything to get them to stop. And so you ran out here, hoping, well, at least if the voices are just as loud, they're a bit more spread out. Is that about right?
No. I mean, not really. It was all fine and normal. I didn't have an imaginary friend as a kid. I was normal. I was fine. And then he died, and then I wasn't. And then I wasn't normal, and I wasn't fine. And no matter what I did, they wouldn't go away. And then I heard your name, and I heard about what you do, and I thought, if you can put them to rest, then maybe you can make them go away.
Instead of answering, Jeb's gonna, like, pull out a bunch of small instruments and start making measurements around B's face and head.
I'm gonna have you roll for that.
18.
What looks like a very physical examination of B allows you to get close enough to supernaturally inspect it. And in your head, you just can't shake the sound of a stream. And you know you're getting that specifically from B. You can hear a distant clanging of metal, like a squeak of, and then you hear, fucking hell.
Okay, no, that one was definitely something.
Yeah, I noticed all of us got real quiet after that. Kind of interrupted my point I was making.
Yes, I, believe that's my cue. Puts back on his hat.
A wooden door slams against the outside of a building right next door to the saloon. And a wispy, smaller than normal tumbleweed rolls out of it and down the street. And coming out right after is a man kind of pulling up his pants a bit, buckling a belt, shirt not tucked in, badge on the side, wiping his hand through greasy hair, wrinkled skin, really bad 5 o'clock shadow happening, scraggly, not all of it's filled in, cheeks are kind of like hanging skin a bit, and he brings his hands up to his eyes to block the redness of the sun before putting a hat on his head, putting both of his hands against his hips, stretching out his back, and looks at the cart and the horses, and looks at the four of you collected outside of the door of the saloon. Turns around and vomits on the ground.
I think B, like, upon instinct, like, rushes over, like, oh my goodness, are you all right?
I'm fine. I'm fine. Who are you?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Leibovitz, Beatrice Leibovitz, and, like, puts out, like, a hand.
Looks at it. Doesn't shake your hand.
Kind of, like, drops it and, like, brushes it, on the, like, kind of, hip, like, on her dress.
You can smell the liquor on his breath.
Okay, I think when he vomits, first off, like when he vomits, Abe laughs. I don't blame you for not drinking any of the water. But do you have to get absolutely shit-faced?
There's some rules to this town to all you new folk. I haven't seen you around before. And his eyes kind of narrowing on Jeb. Maybe you. Rule number one. Don't piss me off. Rule number two isn't really a rule. He points over at the cart. People here ain't gonna buy nothing from you. Promise you that.
I could tell.
Rule number three. Don't drink the water. Rule number four. Find yourself some place to sleep before it gets dark. And I'm going to give you a plot point.
What, pray tell, happens when it gets dark?
The wilds, the wilderness, around these parts get dangerous. I've seen one too many bodies in the morning for my liking.
I think as everyone's kind of around the sheriff, I think Jeb's going to say, Now, this wilderness you're talking about, is this a recent development? I mean, it's been a while since I've been around here. I mean, coming on a couple decades, but I remember this town
always dark and bad.
Bad, yeah. I
cold. You could freeze to death out there without the sun.
So, that's, you don't know then, I'm taking it?
Creatures howl. It's been going on for a long time. Anybody who comes into town, which isn't many these days, get the same warning. If you know what's good for you, stay in the limits.
And that recent, affliction with the water, is that also just bad, or, that happen? Any identifiable point in time.
An identifiable point in time.
Yes, so when did it start?
Roll me another supernatural roll, please.
14.
14? You see, as you're talking to him, right past his head, you see that on a building farther down the street, there used to be a clock. You see that the hands on it are twisted around each other and pointing. They're not moving, but they're just pointing in a direction that is definitely not the current time. And you watch as you ask this question, he says, repeats it back to you pretty much. And you almost watch through his eyes as if he reverses a few seconds. And says, it's been happening for a long time.
I think Jeb's gonna turn to the rest of them and say, does anyone here got a pocket watch?
Well.
The pocket watch seems to be stuck at the same time it was at when you checked it just a little bit earlier.
It's stuck.
Not a very good watch.
Well, I take care of this watch. It works very well. It was working up until about, it looks like until we just rolled into town past the gates.
Would you like to make a tech roll?
Sure.
This is going to be a tier 2, so you need above a 10.
That is a 13.
13. You kind of twist it open, you open the back to look at the gears. Still working.
I guess the hands aren't, no? So this, I don't know, everything's in working order here. I don't know what else it could be. I guess it just don't want to work. There's no other explanation.
Like I said, not a very good watch.
All right, hey, you know, you never complained about me fixing your guns.
So. No, you do a good job with the guns. It's watches, you don't...
All right, you know, I'm...
I'm just giving you a hard time, clapping him on the back.
I know, Abe.
No, I appreciate you. You know, it is weird you can't get it to work. You're good at all this newfangled technology.
You know, it's worked. This is the first time it hasn't worked. All right, I'm sure this happens to every man who has a pocket watch.
I think Jeb, like, does that thing where you almost crack a smile and then you forget you hate the person, so then you try not to smile, but you still smiled a little bit.
Well, is it not also worth noting that it seems to have stopped working since we entered this town? I mean, you just checked it when we were walking towards the town, what, like an hour ago? Less?
Yeah, by all means of how a watch works, it's all operating. The gears are turning, the hands are getting moved, they're just not, the face just isn't showing it. And I'm gonna skitter off to my cart across the street, because there's surely got to be another watch in there to compare with.
Travis, as you head back towards your cart, you turn towards it just as you hear one of the horses give sort of like a weird noise, and you see there are two like small children of like the exact same height, like standing there, like staring up at your cart, and one of them seems to be like curiously approaching it with an outstretched hand.
Oh, easy, children. At it. You don't know what might be in there.
The two of them turn to you at the, like, when I say the exact same time, I mean, it would be more likely that there was one child with a mirror in front of it that turned towards you. They are gray-ish. It's hard to tell, like, what their skin tone is supposed to be, because for lack of a better phrase, they look sun-bleached. And their eyes have this, like, gray spider-webbing in them instead of the red veins. And they both just turn these, like, dead eyes up to you as you approach.
Oh, you two look like you might need to get out of the dust. Let me see if I could... And I'll reach into my back pocket and pull out a handkerchief. And see if I can't smudge off some of this gray dust appearance from the child's cheek.
They don't like move or react really at your approach, and when you like go to wipe at one of their faces, the skin comes away.
Oh shit!
And but instead of blood, it's just dust that comes out. And the one that you didn't wipe its face, it grabs the other one's hand. And they both dart off into one of the many, like, empty-ish houses around here. And you could swear as they ran, their footprints dragged the earth up with them.
Don't tell me they're all stuck. Surely not all of my watches broke simultaneously for no reason.
Not all of them were set to the same time, necessarily. Depended on, like, the current working order, when you fixed them, that sort of thing. But a few of them were broken. You know what those ones are. The ones that should be working are stuck. But not at the same time as your pocket watch, just at whatever time it was on them as they went.
Huh, must be some material reason that all of these stopped at once. Maybe there's something going on with the Earth. You know, I read on an article that they've discovered magnets or electromagnets or something going on with the Earth. Thanks to all the hot rock that's somewhere in here. I don't know. Anyway, I'm muttering to myself because I'm at the cart. No one can hear this. I'm rambling like a madman, but I'll come back over. It's like, yep, they all work, but they're all stuck. never mind the two children made of, covered in dust.
Be you watch those kids run off. And you're taken somewhere else to when you were younger. Maybe around that size. With an even smaller partner at your side. Just a memory hits you.
B almost smiles a little bit. And then that faint smile will quickly give way to like a sinking pit in its stomach. And B lets out like a shaky breath as this memory kind of washes over her.
And so does water. At the end of that memory, you feel colder. Your hair feels damp against your skin, but when you reach up to touch it, it's dry.
And B kind of like hugs its arms in and just tries to like steady everything. Closes its eyes. And then opens its eyes again and tries to just almost focus on the heat and the sun and the dryness of the air and the dust around. And just focus on these things that would in any other moment be incredibly irritable, but in this moment are grounding her in this place, in this time, and not in the past.
Oh, but only if you could. Because as you blink your eyes open, the sheriff says, "All right, as I said, now's not the time to go out." And the sky and the coloring of this town is purple. The sun is gone. The moon is out. It has gone from being 100 degrees to 40 degrees in an instant. Night has fallen. You can take shelter in any place you can find, but don't walk out that gate now. And the sheriff turns and re-enters the sheriff's office. And the four of you stand in the middle of Temple at night.
That was Kenzie Tartaglioni and Ashley Westover as your GMs, Riley Manis as Travis Black, Stevie Fay as Beatrice Leibowitz, Brendan Hooker as Abner Slade, and Linny Shell as Jebediah Monroe. You can find out where to follow the cast as well as their own projects in the episode description. If you liked the episode, we'd love to hear from you, so leave us a rating and or a review. We appreciate you listening. And a special thank you to Scriv the Bard, the writer of this wonderful system, Bard RPG.